All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuck nicks? What the fuckocrats? What the fuck publicans? How's it going? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. It's called WTF. Thank you for enjoying. Thank you for joining. Thank you for being here. I'm getting a lot of emails from people who are watching me on Glow and apparently never knew I existed, which is fine. Not complaining. It's nice to be discoverable. It's nice to know that most people have no idea who I am. And I'm being honest. I'm very okay with that. But it is kind of interesting to get emails from people who see me, wonder about me, search my name, and then they have like 800, 900, whatever, however many podcasts we've done. They've got my show. They've got my five or six comedy records. They're going to have this, the books, the two books. I'm happy that they have a rabbit hole. I hope it doesn't exhaust them of me. Because God knows I'm exhausted by the Maron rabbit hole because I'm living in it. It's in my head. It's always open. It's a very easy door. There's no lock on it. It's kind of blowing open. It's kind of creaky and blowing open. I'm like, what's going on in there? Oh, not again. Not again. But today on the show, I have the Lucas Brothers, which was pretty great. It was a really good time. Keith and Kenny Lucas are identical twin brothers that dress pretty much the same. And it's very trippy to talk to them both at the same time for over an hour. I mean trippy in the real sense of trippy. Like, what the fuck? Oh my God, there's two of you. But I didn't know what to expect. They've got a new special on, I believe it's on Netflix. Yeah, it's called On Drugs, the Lucas Brothers, On Drugs. And that's a double entendre. Is that the right word? On, as in terms of paper on something. And then also on drugs, like I'm high. But either way, I didn't know what to expect. And I had a really good time with these guys. So that's going to be happening in a little while. Also, speaking about drugs, I'm a little squirrely. You know, I'm squirrely. And this happens every year around this time. When you listen to this, if you listen on Monday, it'll be August 7th. And on Wednesday, August 9th. I'll acknowledge the day. I'll acknowledge the monumental achievement on Wednesday of 18 years sobriety for me. 18 years sober on Wednesday. So I don't know. Anything could happen between now when I'm talking to you and Wednesday. I'll let you know Thursday. Hopefully Thursday will be just another show and not just maybe no show at all. Like, where's Mark? I don't know, man. He couldn't hack it. He's coming up on that 18th sober anniversary, and he's out in Palm Desert somewhere. He's out in Desert Hot Springs with some dude in a trailer. I don't know what the fuck they're doing, but it's not good. Yeah, I'll bring the mics with me on that one, on the meth relapse. I'll make sure to have the mics with me, and I'll interview whoever I'm doing it with. Not going to happen, people. Relax. Making a dark joke. But I do notice a difference, and I don't know. Some of you who have some sobriety out there know that coming up on those markers, I get like I'm irritable. I should be going to meetings, but even then, like I'm sort of like, you know, fuck the meetings. I don't want to deal with it. I'm impatient. I'm edgy. I'm having dreams. You just get squirrely, man. And you don't realize it. I don't want to believe it's true, but your brain fucking knows. I 3 days ago, I had a dream. I mean, I'm a long time sober already. Granted, I do my nicotine lozenges and I get jacked up on coffee, especially now that I have a little downtime. Like, I'm on my second pot of coffee here and I'm recording this before noon. So, like, you know, it's not like I'm not, you know, activating the neurotransmitters, but, you know, these aren't things that are making my life unmanageable and they're acceptable. But the booze and drug thing, man. So I have a dream. I'm in the dream and it's real as hell, man. Real as hell. This is 3 days ago, coming up on my 18th sober anniversary. And I got a dream. It's just, I'm just sitting at a bar and I just ordered my second Jack and Coke. It was a familiar looking bar. It looked like a bar that in my dream, it felt like I lived there. I'm getting my second Jack and Coke and I'm smoking cigarettes. And I'm with Dean Del Rey for some reason. I'm not blaming him on it, for anything. It's not, I'm sure he didn't have, you know, cajole me into drinking. He's a pretty sober dude himself, very healthy guy. But for some reason, it was me and Dean, and I'm just sitting there. And the thing I remember from the dream is that feeling in my lungs from smoking cigarettes. You know, when you smoke cigarettes and you've been smoking a long time, there's always a little bit of a kind of a wet ache in your lungs. And I remember in the dream that I had that wet ache in my lungs from smoking cigarettes, and I was about to get that second Jack and Coke. And in the dream, I'm thinking, I'm like, man, I'm not sober anymore. This is like I'm drinking right now, and am I gonna tell anybody? How am I gonna handle this? That's really all I remember: the wet ache and wondering whether or not I would cop to drinking, and also that first sip of Jack and Coke. Whoo, man. Oh, bless you, go to a meeting. Oh, fuck. Yeah, you better go to a fucking meeting. Ooh, it's got little shivery shivs. That wet ache, that first sip, a little shivery. So what do I do? What do you do for a sober anniversary? Well, here in the Los Angeles area, they call them birthdays, and you go to a meeting and get a cake, and you blow out a bunch of candles and share your gratitude and talk about your story a little bit and get a couple of your old pals to give you your cake. And that's that. You get a coin right on time. Sarah the painter got me a 17-year coin. Maybe she'll get me an 18-year coin because I just recently lost a 17-year coin. Right on time. Right on time. Because they just build up the coins. And it's funny when you're going in and out, you know, when you're not quite getting the sober thing, you just start amassing coins. They're not a great indication, you know. you just got a lot of these attempt coins, but you know, keep going, keep trying. But what I usually do inappropriately on my sober birthday is I will email my ex-wife who got me sober. I don't speak to her. She doesn't like me. She doesn't want to hear from me at all. But yet I insist on sending an email to an address that I'm sure she gets one email a year from that address. And it's me going, thank you for getting me sober. I do that despite the fact that probably ruins her fucking day. But, you know, I feel it's necessary. I will give credit where credit is due. And it wouldn't have happened without her, despite what happened after that. You know what I'm saying? Things, you know, life. So that's what's going on with me. Oh, I had this other dream. Oh, shit. I just remembered the other dream. I think it was this house. This is not an alcohol-related dream, but it fucked me up. I think it was my house. It was this house, and there was a party going on. And I don't know. There's a lot of people there. Everyone was in costume. But I was not in a costume, but I was not dressed how I usually dress. I was dressed like I used to dress maybe 10 years ago. And maybe I was dressed as me 10 years ago, but it was clearly a costume party. I felt very out of place. It was my house and I wasn't in costume. And I went out the back door here by the garage and I walked down the hill here and I'm looking down on the hill. There's a pond that doesn't exist in real life, but it exists in a dream. So this kind of muddy pond, and I'm just up on the edge and I'm looking at the pond, and out of the ground, just above the pond, this giant snake comes out, and I'm just watching it come out of the dirt, like a giant, like anaconda size, like one of those massive, like goat eating snakes, just comes out and just slithers into the water. And I remember in the dream, I made a mental note, don't go into pond, snake. And then I walked around to this other, and there seemed to be a clearer water there. And I saw a seal. And what was the other animal? Because I knew that not only was a seal not supposed to be here in the hills of Highland Park in Los Angeles in some freshwater adjunct to a snake-infested pond, but there was another animal with it that didn't make sense. It might not have even been a water animal. I remember seeing the other animal being like, that's weird, in the water, and like, oh, there's a seal. And that was all of that one. If you have any ideas, I'm open. I do like the idea of being at a costume party and being the only one not in costume, because that's happened in reality, but why is it happening in my head? All right, so what have I been doing with my downtime? Well, yesterday was a big day. I went to a box of wires and cords. You know the one I'm talking about. Box of wires and cords. I don't know. They just build up. And I, like, I'm in this process of making life lighter. So I went, I was like, I got nothing to do. The fucking world stinks. You know, like, things are out of control. I'm terrified all the time. How do I make this manageable? Well, there's that box of wires and cords that could use some organizing once you wrangle that fucker into place. So you go, you know, these wires, they're just, you don't know what they're for. Everything comes with more wires than you need. You buy electronic things. It's like they come with the wire you need and then a wire that you're like, what does this one even do? Who knows how to use this one? Should I read something? Does it do more than I think? Or is it for some other piece of equipment that I don't have? What does this wire do? Fuck it. Put it in the box. So eventually you have a box of these useless wires or wires you don't need, and then you got to go through it and make some decisions. I don't know what to do with it. It's sitting out on the deck now. I don't need any of them. I haven't looked at those wires in years, and now I've gone through them, and now I'm ready to throw them away. But they still got the twisties on them, and some of them are in plastic. They're good. They're new wires. What do you do? What am I going to take them to Goodwill? It's not. You can't do that. I could go put them on the street and just maybe write on the box, wires. And see, maybe that'll work. Or I could throw them away. Throw them in the fucking garbage. If I haven't used them in years, I'm probably not going to use them. All right, look, let's talk to the Lucas Brothers. As I said, their new special on Netflix is called Lucas Brothers on Drugs. And I had a great deal of fun talking to these. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer. And I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago. Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF.
Guys.
It's funny, not unlike my first experience in seeing you two. Like, I drove up, I didn't think you'd be here, and then you both come out.
Yeah.
And I think the first time I met you guys, I mean, where the hell was that? Like, in Portland or Chicago?
It was Austin, Texas.
Yeah. At a festival?
At a festival. Yeah. Moon Tower.
Right. And I thought I was tripping. Like, I couldn't quite manage the twin.
You did seem shocked. Shocked, but it was like perplexed.
I was overwhelmed. There were two of you. Very well-defined humans, both fashion-wise and appearance-wise. And I'm like, I'm going to have to take this in small doses.
That's fair. It can be overwhelming, man.
But is that something you deal with your whole life as a twins?
At birth, yes. I guess you're like kind of like weird and special at the same time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you just sort of live with it. It becomes so...
It becomes a part of your existence.
Yeah.
I mean, you're referred to as a twin.
Yeah. Right.
You know, you don't even have an identity as an individual. So you sort of just, even our mom called us Kenny and Keith. He didn't say Kenny or Keith.
Oh, it's always a dual thing.
It's always a dual thing.
You always came in a pair?
Always.
Never,
always.
No, mom didn't pull either of you aside and say, like, you know, you're the good one.
She did a good job in, like, treating us as equals.
Yeah. I was 2 minutes older, so I would get I'm the older twin, but I'm like, come on.
But that's like the joke, right?
Yeah.
Do you have other siblings?
Yeah, we have two younger brothers.
It's so funny. I was about to say normal.
yeah, they are.
They are. They are normal.
they're younger.
Yeah.
So, but I guess these twin questions don't have anything to do with anything other than curiosity.
Sure.
Well, I mean, how often do you meet them? Do you know,
that's
like
fair.
out in the world? Are you guys part of a club?
The twin club?
Yeah. Do you have that?
Deuces, man.
Well, there is a festival that's dedicated. Deuces is much better than name. Twin club. There is a festival that's dedicated to twins. So I guess on some small level.
We are, yeah. Twinsburg.
But I mean, but that's sort of odd that you have this specific birthright.
Yeah.
And that it's unique and it is it's not incredibly common, right? But you would think that, you know, what's the opportunity to meet other identical twins? And like, I'd love to see a support group of just identical twins dealing with the way they're misunderstood by people.
We just met a pair of twins, Kaplan twins, they're girls, and they're our first twins ever met in Hollywood, and we're like best friends now. We're like, we love you guys. Thank you guys for understanding our plight.
Yeah,
but it's not really a plight. It's just
it's just an existence that's fairly unique.
And right,
black male twins are the rarest.
Black male twins. So
we should be put in the Bible. We are like a miracle. We should be placed in the New Testament.
But I like that you've done that research.
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to stay abreast.
How rare? What are we talking? One in a million? More than that?
More than that. I'm saying one and maybe like 10 million.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it's one to 10 million. Something like
I don't know what a twins group would really talk about. Just like a bunch of people at the end of the reps going like, we just like to dress.
Do we have to split up?
Yeah.
Why do we have to split up? Why is it okay for gangs to dress alike and not twins?
All right, but honestly, why do you dress alike?
Look, it's part just like because no one else can do it.
Yeah,
it's almost just like why not?
Yeah,
you know, like why not be eccentric?
Yeah,
in a way that
more eccentric than just being identical twins.
Yeah, and fuck, he wears a lot of things that I like to wear. Yeah. So I was like, fuck, I'm not going to change up my wardrobe.
It's a lot easier too.
Like, oh yeah,
I can just grab his clothes. Like I don't have to think about my own shit. Like if I was like a stylish guy who wore blazers, I mean that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's like you don't have to.
Have
make
you had those conversations where you're like, are you wearing that? You're gonna fuck this whole thing up because there's no way I can wear that.
Well, he tried to change up his wardrobe. He's like, no, I'm gonna start wearing like toboggan hats. And I was like, oh come on, man. Like I can't. I don't want to wear that. Not in this winter time, man.
So you have to have those negotiations. We find a middle way on the headgear.
And when things get really tense, you got to threaten something. So I'll threaten to shave off my beard. Like if I'm like, no, you got to pay extra rent. I'm gonna
take it off. You're going to be all alone.
I'm taking it off.
But like, where'd you guys come from?
We were born in Newark, New Jersey.
Really?
My
roots are from the Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, Elizabeth.
Well, I mean, I wasn't born there, but my grandfather was born there. I was born in Jersey City.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Jersey City's right there.
Yeah, it's all right there. Yeah, all those shitty places. They're just right together.
You just clump them
Jersey
together.
City, Newark, and Elizabeth. But how long did you spend there? You got family there still?
Oh, we still have family there. We spent a long time in Newark. I mean, from 1 until 18.
Yeah.
I mean, we moved around a bunch and we lived in North Carolina for a bit. But
what part of North Carolina?
High Point.
I don't know where that is.
It's in between like Charlotte and Winston-Salem.
Near Greensboro.
Near Greensboro. Yeah.
But you're Jersey guys, really?
Yeah,
Jersey dudes.
And you know, so what's your mom and pop still together?
They never married.
Oh
no, they were together for like 8 seconds, had us, and then that was their relationship. So it was a miracle.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
what about the other siblings?
They're half brothers.
Yeah.
Oh, got it.
Yeah.
So your dad's gone.
I mean, he went to prison when we were 6. He's still around, but we don't really have much of a relationship.
No.
But really?
No.
But your mom did, or how did you know about him at all?
They took us to go see him in prison when we were like 5. I was like, I don't want to go, man. I'd rather just, like, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I want to just chill home and watch cartoons. But yeah, I guess I'll go to prison on Saturday morning.
What was his reaction when the two of you turned up looking the same?
I don't. I think he was too concerned about prison. I don't even think he was thinking about. I don't think he was too.
He
concerned
didn't have
about
a moment that, where he's like, "Holy shit! What are the odds? What are the odds that I had two of them?
8 seconds. That's crazy."
So no relationship there, huh?
I mean, we tried, but it's hard. I mean, like,
there's literally something standing in between us and him, which is prison.
Yeah. He's still there?
He's not there now. Yeah. He got out in 03, 04?
Yeah, 04.
But by that point. We were.
And what about your mom? The new guys. Did he act like your dad?
He was a stepfather in every sense of the word.
The good senses.
Bad. Horrible. He was like terrible.
Yeah, he wasn't the greatest dude. They got divorced.
Yeah.
Oh.
They got divorced when we were like 15.
Mm-hmm. Was he shitty to both of you equally?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. He treated us equally.
I'll give him that.
So, he was an equal opportunity.
So if one of you fucked up, it's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You're both paying for
it. Yeah, he did do that. He fucked us both over when I screwed up. So really? I apologize.
It's okay, man.
Oh, look at that. Burying hatchets. What was that about? Some bullshit?
I was a bit of a wild child.
I mean,
I think I starved for attention. So like I would do things like, I don't know, I stuck my middle finger up to my teacher once. She told me.
Your first act of comedy.
My first act of comedy. I was like, beginning. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And everybody ratted me out. But my stepfather didn't like that.
And then did you guys have to have a conference? It's like, look, if you're going to do the bad shit, I'm going to take the hit for it.
Yeah.
So we got to talk about it before it happens.
Yeah,
and wonder to decide whether or not it's worth the risk.
You should have given me more pep talk.
I should have, man. I just trusted your judgment, but I guess I shouldn't have.
So did you guys go into the city a lot?
Yeah, our godfather, he would take us to the city all the time because he would do business there.
Yeah.
And we would just drive there, and I remember going over out of the Holland Tunnel, and I would see like the buildings.
Yeah,
and like
yeah.
And billboard. I was 7 years old, and I was just like, "Holy shit, I'm amazed by this."
Wasn't that fucking exciting?
It was the most exciting. So,
and you get enamored. You're like, "What is this?"
Yeah.
And you're just overwhelmed by the.
Because Newark is a ghetto. Like, it's like it's terrifying. It's scary. It's like, but when you drive into New York, it's something totally different.
Everything levels out.
Yeah.
You know, like, how could this be a ghetto? Look at it.
Yeah.
How do people even fit into this place? I remember doing that drive because I was a kid too. And, you know, I was in New Jersey from like 1 to like 6 years old. But mm-hmm. my grandparents, the whole family was always there. So we moved to New Mexico and I'd go back every year. But when you're a kid, and like whoever drives you in, whether it's the bridge, or usually it was the tunnel, it's the Lincoln Tunnel. I went.
Lincoln. Yeah, Lincoln. Yeah, we did Holland.
So like you go through the Lincoln Tunnel, you come out, and it's just sort of like it's overwhelming and amazing.
Overwhelming.
Every part of it. Like you're just looking out the window, you're like, where does it end?
Yeah,
these buildings.
Yeah, it's just like you see so many people. It's fast paced.
Yeah,
I mean the billboards.
Yeah,
it's just the mystique of New York.
Yeah,
you instantly gravitate toward it.
So when did you guys start like being funny? From day one, were you like?
Well, it's crazy. You know, like for a lot of comedians, humor comes from the sort of being alone and being able to observe the world.
Yeah.
So like we started observing the world, and I mean,
early.
Like, we started
because we were really quiet kids, mm-hmm. so we would like.
Were you everyone was sort of baffled?
Like, yeah.
They're twins, but are they okay?
They thought we probably had mental. Like,
yeah,
we never talked.
Yeah.
We barely talked in school, but when we were together. Yeah, we would create these fictional worlds, and like, it was crazy.
But mm-hmm. like no one doesn't remember you guys. Like, I imagine that, like, you know, like, no matter whether you talked or not, like, I imagine at every level of your, you know, history, there are people in your classes going like, oh, yeah, I remember those guys.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what people say. Oh, those guys never talk. Yeah. I didn't think they would be comedians. And we didn't think we wouldn't have guessed it. No. And we didn't think we would be comedians.
But what was it? Like, because you guys have this thing, what you didn't need to talk really because you always had each other. Was that the mm-hmm. way it worked?
Exactly.
Precisely.
Like you had your own world.
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't need to make friends.
Right. You protected each other. Mm-hmm. You looked the same.
Mm-hmm.
You probably could get away with things that other people couldn't.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's got to be. Yeah. All right. Tell me the one, you know, girl story.
It's not the girl. We did trick the government, though.
We tricked the government. We went bigger. We don't like to limit our trickery.
Yeah. You know, we want to do things that go against the system. So he took my my driver's test for me.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not take my road test.
I had no confidence that he could pass it, and I was tired of hearing him complain about it, so I said, I'll do it, and I did it.
Were you nervous?
No.
No?
First time, I was super nervous, but I failed my first time. Then I passed my second time with flying colors, and I was like, I'll just take his.
Mm-hmm.
And then I
kept failing, and I was like, all right, let's get this out of the way.
But do you let him drive now?
He can drive now.
Yeah. He lets me drive now. The first time I drove, though, I got into a car accident, which makes a lot of sense since I didn't know how to fucking drive.
Yeah, that's right.
So that was it. That was the big scam, the big twin
scam. Yeah, we never tricked girls. because, I mean...
I think it's a crime.
It is a crime.
It is? Right.
Isn't it? Well...
I would imagine that taking the driver's test on some level...
Yeah, but that's against the government, though, so yeah, fuck them.
Yeah,
right. I can spin that and say it was like activism or some right. shit like that. You know, I was fighting the system, you know?
Why are you keeping my brother down?
Why are you keeping my brother down? Let him get his license.
He already took my father away. Give me my license.
Oh, that's good. It's good that you don't have one of those horrible, you know, duping the girl stories.
I just don't feel right doing it. I don't know.
I don't remember what those stories are usually. They're usually like that girl thinks she's with one of you and you're she's with both of you.
And then we tag out and then we,
Right.
Yeah, but then it's like, you gotta like, what if you don't like the girl or what if you don't want to date?
And what if you just want to be a decent human?
Yeah,
you
want to be a decent human being and not trick people all the time.
I want to be a super villain.
I want to use my powers for good.
Well, good. Okay, so I get out here. Which one's Kenny and Keith?
Kenny's right here, to
black
the left.
Cat.
Yeah. I guess we both
black
have
cat. What, black cat. When people ask you that, what is the identifying characteristic? Like, I'm the one with the what?
I'm more depressed than you. You can't see it, but it's there.
Are you, though?
I think so.
I would say he's more depressed. I mean, I have my stage of depression, but I feel like, you know, once you have that, when you plateau and have that breakdown, you sort of build yourself back up.
Yeah,
and I feel like you're still sort
well,
of...
I had my breakdown last
year.
Really? Wait, so you had different breakdowns?
Yeah, I had different breakdowns.
And yours was before?
My breakdown was when we were in law school.
You're Keith.
I'm Keith, yeah.
Okay, so you had a breakdown. Did you finish law school?
No.
Did were you both in law school?
We were both in law school.
Really?
Yeah.
So you figured like this is a... we got a... you know, our law firm... It's going to be like, think of the commercials.
Yeah. Lucas and Lucas.
You would, like, people would come to you just to see you.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be a spectacle.
Yeah. We might be shitty lawyers, but they look the same.
Oh, those commercials would have been great if you were ambulance chasers.
Yeah. We can still do those commercials. So that's the thing. We can still do this.
Have you done them?
We want to.
That'd be a good sketch.
That's right.
So you go to high school in Newark?
We went to three different high schools.
Yeah.
Well, four.
Four.
Four different high schools.
Yeah.
We started off in High Point, North Carolina, and then we went to a few in Newark, New Jersey, and then we graduated from one in Irvington, probably the worst high school in Jersey.
Yeah.
And where'd you go to college?
We went to the College of New Jersey. It's a small liberal arts, like real close to Princeton.
Mm-hmm. What were you studying? What was the
interest? Philosophy, yeah.
That's what I was getting at. Like, we get in here. I'll get back around to it. Let's move through the separate depressions and how you took care of each other. Like, were you like, I've been through this shit. I know exactly. You remember me?
I did this already, man. Listen to me.
You can't understand my pain.
No, I can.
Yeah, I can, literally. We have the same DNA.
Oh, God. But you studied philosophy because that's when we walk in here and you're dropping Spinoza.
Yeah, baby.
Because I've been obsessed with the guy. Yeah. I got his books over there. I can't get through them. I always wanted to understand philosophy, but there's a language to it that you got to learn first. And there's a lot of things that got to be laid down about things like phenomenon, being, you know. And
substance. Yada, yada.
And like, I just never got hold of it. I don't have the... I would really have to nerd out, and I'm not that nerdy.
That's fair. No.
And like, it always bums me out because I always look at those books going like, it's all in there, and I can't access it. Yeah. Like Roland Barthes, I can get the postmodernists a bit because they're kind of funny.
Sure.
Like Baudrillard, I can get Nietzsche. Kind of the poems are good.
Yeah.
But like, still, there's a. It just seemed like anything that you would fucking pick up.
Start here, man.
I think I had that.
Bertrand Russell is.
I had that.
He elucidates the theories, I think, in a very clear fashion. But obviously, you know, you want to get read through the original text, but
there's no point to read Parmenides. You can just read
just the name exhausting. I didn't even know that guy, but the EDs at the end, it's like, that's not, I can't go back that far.
Yeah, that's fair.
I read Plato's Republic. I read Aristotle, the Ethics, right? Is that his?
Aristotle, the
Symposium.
Nicomachean Ethics and the Symposium.
It's still pretty fresh with you guys.
Pre-Socratics.
You're still carrying around the history of Western philosophy.
I consider that the Bible, man.
It's really?
My Bible,
the Bertrand Russell book.
Yeah.
Didn't he write one that's a lot more simple? Fuck it, hold on.
I think that was Bertrand.
Probably is.
Oh, here it is, right there.
Is that Bertrand?
Yeah, it's Bertrand.
Yeah, the problems of philosophy.
This is what I was told as a novice, was like, you know, just get that, mm-hmm. and we'll get into it, right?
That's a good one to start with, too.
Yeah, so I'm like, all right, this will lay it out for me. And the contents, appearance and reality. All right, that sounds good. And then right the second chapter, you get into, like, the existence of matter. I'm like, do I have time?
Yeah. That's fair. You got to love philosophy. And I'm sure you love it, but you have to, like...
It just takes patience.
But it's like math, man. It's like
it's very mathematical.
Yeah, because I took a philosophy class or a logic class in college where I thought like this will be good. I'll learn. You know, I've done this twice and I've talked about it a bit. I took a logic class and I was there for like an not even an hour, 10 minutes. I'm like, this is fucking math. This is math.
Yeah.
Right.
They deal with proofs and
a lot of geometry influences. Since Descartes, geometry has pretty much dominated philosophy.
Pythagoras.
Pythagoras, too.
I did all right in geometry. I couldn't handle algebra. I couldn't handle chemistry. But, like, my senior year of high school, like, I aced philosophy because there are pictures. Yeah. But logic, I think I was looking for something else. Yeah. And, yeah, I was like, I thought this was a logic class. And that was, symbolic logic is what it is.
Yep.
And then I took a philosophy class years later as an adult at the new school when I was smoking a lot of weed. I was like, you know, I'm gonna ace it now. Yeah. Like, I took existentialism in college, but I was distracted.
Yeah.
Like, can't we just get to the answers?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about philosophy. Yeah. Like, you never, like, they always conclude with, oh, well, that's not an adequate answer, but, you know, we're going to still speculate.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's
but
so
you guys dug it.
I dug it. I still dig it. Yeah. Even more now
even
than
more
I did in college. I was still holding on to, I don't know, some false beliefs in college, but now I feel like my mind, ever since doing comedy.
But now, like, I moved more into the poetic elements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's a philosophy, like, you know, Nietzsche's got all the good poetry, mm-hmm. and I move more towards art, mm-hmm. you know, like, and poetry. It's like, that's where I my girlfriend's a painter, mm-hmm. and I'm like, this is how you interpret shit.
Yeah.
This is what life is.
Yeah.
You know, what do we got to complicate it with the fucking equations?
Yeah, that's fair.
But Spinoza, what's his trip? Because why were we referencing it coming
so
in?
So Spinoza, you know, what I like about him is that he tries to ground the spiritual basis of Christianity in science.
Uh-huh.
So he's essentially trying to shift
a Jew
religion from
a Jew.
He was the first secular Jewish person in Europe.
Yeah, he's a Jew. He's saying, let's unpack this Christian business.
Yeah. That's fair. I didn't think about it on that level. I did not think about it on that level. And he's just like, I just think his... Based on, like, I looked at the Hubble scope. You ever really look at the Hubble scope and you see, like...
The telescope?
And you see the universe.
Uh-huh.
I think his insights sort of predated that, where he's saying that, like, we're all sort of from the same source.
Yeah.
And that time is unreal and that...
Yeah.
There is objective truth in the universe. We just can't understand it because our minds are limited. Like,
right.
Our perceptions are limited.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's only so much we can see. And then after looking through that telescope, I'm like, holy crap. Yes. There's more out there that we just don't...
We can probably never comprehend.
We can never comprehend.
Someone can probably comprehend it in the future, but I don't know if we can now.
Well, let me ask you, like, just on a practical level. See, like, when you say that to me, I'm like, yeah, that obviously the space seems vast.
Mm-hmm. It is
and,
vast.
Yeah, and but you know, how do you not? I you know, obviously, I'm pro science.
Sure.
Yeah. But, like, you know, I'm like, I had to change my tire today,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and that took, you know, 2 days of thinking.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, getting from there to, like, what about this universe is sort of like, I don't know if I have the time for that.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that it's going to help me right now.
That's fair. I think for me, it's like, it's good to know that there's someone thinking about things that I think about, and he provides pretty reasonable arguments. Like, he says, yeah, the universe is deterministic, materialistic,
right.
and we probably don't have free will.
Right.
I think that's true. But we do have a mind that mm-hmm. can speculate. We have a mind that can go...
It's limitless.
It's limitless. I mean, Your mind can think about anything. So in that sense, we are free, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can...
We're free to... Think about the shit that we want to think about.
Right. Yeah. So you're saying that, like, so this premise is that the universe is just entropic and deterministic, and, you know, everything sort of happens outside of us, and we have very little control over anything.
Yes.
But we do have a freedom of mind.
We have mm-hmm. consciousness.
We have consciousness.
That's another way to put it.
Yeah.
Is that yours? So,
certainly not.
That's good. I'm going to write that down.
Consciousness. awareness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Self-awareness.
But no, the connection to the universe. I mean, if the universe is comprised of consciousness and it's through us, then
we're connected to something larger.
No, I get that. But I guess it really what you do then with all this information is just a nice sort of groundwork to understand reality from.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, precisely.
We don't have any problem with reality. The idea of reality?
I do. I think that we think that we live in a reality, but we're actually suspended in space, and the only reason that our Earth is the way it is are because of the conditions that are set by the universe.
The universe,
sure.
Yeah.
Gravity.
But you got no truck with the fact that I'm holding a cup.
Yeah, I'm not an extreme skeptic.
Well, if you reduce that to a subatomic particle.
No, I get
but
that.
There's something,
but there's something
there. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. But it's not what we think it is.
Yeah, but you can't be engaged on that level every day when you wake up. It's like, I want some eggs. It's like, what difference does it matter what you eat when you break it down?
Yeah, but I think as a human, you just make certain assumptions and then
course.
You just move on with your life. I mean,
you have to.
Yeah, yes. You have to.
You
yeah,
can't
sure.
get stuck at the cup or no cup.
Yeah, exactly. But you can also speculate.
Yeah. Sure.
And that's the beauty of
sure,
the human
sure,
mind.
Sure, when you want to annoy people.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, yeah, with your philosophical wisdom. You know, one of those, two assholes going like, wait, but do we really know? Like, it's like, oh, fuck, the Lucas twins are doing it again. Just you cornering one idiot who's like, but wait. How many times has that happened?
I try not to be an asshole too.
Well, that's open to interpretation, isn't it?
It really is.
So. I'm going to bring in three people that met you in college.
Well, what does it mean to be an asshole? That's the question you must ask yourself.
Oh, I know what it means. I'm very clear. Yeah. When the girl is crying. Yeah,
okay. That's fair.
That's a
definitive conclusion. Yes, you're right. You were probably being an asshole.
That's right. So the fact that you still carry the history of Western philosophy, we didn't finish. Spinoza found some scientific, you know, what did he glean? Why were we talking about him when we came in here?
I don't think he did much research in terms of, I think he was more
he was
thinker,
a pure rationalist.
Pure rationalist. But I just think that he got it right. On some level where he's saying that we're all from the same source.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think
Africa, right?
Africa, yeah. We're all from Africa. We are all niggas. We're all niggas. So just
that's what Spinoza
suck it
said.
Up. You're all niggas, guys.
They retitled that book, though, didn't they? Isn't it called The Ethics?
Now it's called The Ethics.
You know, you couldn't
use the N-word.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They had to change it up a bit.
Yeah, all right. So I get that.
And he was like, he was like banished from every major.
Yeah, he got
the Catholic Church.
Isn't that interesting that when you really think about those sort of cataclysms of history and persecution and you know that these thinkers were put away and mm-hmm. It's been a very kind of like horribly chaotic and destructive process civilization.
Oh, yeah.
And by then everybody was pretty well civilized.
I know. Crazy.
But it was church driven, right?
Oh, yeah. The church and the state.
The church had
church.
The power of the state, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now, even now, the cataclysms continue. They just continue.
It seems like it gets more powerful, mm-hmm. which is strange. You would think that, with the advances of science and the fact that we have more information.
Well, science is in its infancy, and then religion's been associated with politics in the state since Constantine.
Religion has been fighting science since day one.
Since day one.
Yeah,
since
because
one dude
you know,
was like, oh.
Well, progress on those levels is less important to people who want to attain and maintain power.
Mm-hmm.
That's right?
Yep. That's right.
And,
it's all about power.
And get shit done and get all the money.
Yep. That's
yep.
it. That's
greed
all it's about.
And power, man. Yeah. And you'll do whatever it takes.
I don't understand that. I'm fortunate in that, I've got a lot of flaws. But greed ain't one of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have that one. I don't understand the logic of it foregoing any sort of moral intent.
Yeah.
Or justifying or rationalizing out of greed. I just don't have that one.
Same.
I got other
same.
Problems. I got drug problems.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, me too.
I got the other 6-7 deadly.
But at least you don't got greed.
I don't got that one.
Yeah. For some reason, greed just strikes me as like, not only do you want to acquire power and money, but it's something that you have to constantly think about.
Yeah.
Like if you're not happy unless you have obtained this thing. And even when you obtain all the material in the world, you're still not happy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what strikes me as, like, I just don't. Greed is such a
mental thing. Wait, why don't look in the index of the history of Western philosophy under happiness. See what's listed. How many pages in there?
Oh, yeah. Happiness, they probably have.
Yeah. Give it a try.
It's all
maybe it's not for happiness. Maybe it's just power. You just want to dominate other people.
But the question of happiness, you know, as comics, as philosophers, and as an idea, is it in there?
It's definitely in here.
Oh, I bet.
That's all they talk about.
Oh,
happiness is
there. It is.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Oh, really?
9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
Oh, really?
15, 16, 17. Yeah, it's.
And what can you sum up some of the philosophical arc around happiness?
I think the big thing for philosophers is that to be happy, you have to live a virtuous life committed to reason,
to the study of
philosophy.
That's all philosophy. That's metaphysics,
epistemology, logic,
aesthetics.
Right.
Aesthetics, all of it. You have to be committed to understanding.
Living clean. Balancing shit.
Yeah.
Making room for new shit.
Yeah.
But arguing about it.
Sure. Yeah. Debating, yeah. Discussing.
Criticizing everything.
Mm-hmm. So
being annoying.
Being an asshole.
Well, it's good that you guys didn't talk to other people much. So you just have these conversations with each other. Did it ever come down to, like, you know, I'm going to hit you if you don't shut up because you're wrong about this metaphysical situation?
We've gotten to some very intense discussions regarding metaphysics.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It gets really, really heated.
Because I'm more of a rationalist and he's more of an empiricist.
I would say so. He likes to say that I'm an extreme skeptic, which I'm not. I think I'm more, I'm a little bit more cautious. I'm a little bit more... More skeptical.
You're skeptical,
but not an extreme skeptic.
Yeah, I like to make bold assertions.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
Like free will doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Or that time is unreal.
And I would argue that there's not enough information to conclude that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that is that's an execution of his free will. He just shut you the fuck
right.
down.
That's
I think you're wrong.
That's
what are you going to do now? So I guess that proves it.
Yep. Shit, if I was going to punch you, I would have done it already.
So you guys are, so this all gets turned, you get turned on to this shit in college.
Yeah.
And then you're like, you know, what, I guess there was a twin, you know, conversation of like, well, what do we do with all this bullshit? And you thought law.
Yeah.
Because you wanted to be this philosophically virtuous dudes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who were going to, you know, help.
I wish that was the mode of thinking. It was more I was poor,
so it's greed.
It's greed. It was driven by. I wanted to make money.
Uh-huh.
Law seemed to be the only path.
We did a internship at fellowship at Princeton with professors, and we saw what the life would be like for PhD candidates, and we talked to some
philosophy.
Yeah, and it sounded brutal. It was like, it was hard to get a job. I was like, but you guys go to Princeton, you should be able to get a job outside of. And they were like, no, it's difficult.
Yeah. No one's looking for philosopher PhDs that focused on Kant.
Yeah,
so maybe
Kant's metaphysics.
Like, we need a doctor in here. Can someone help us? Yeah. Yes, I am a doctor in philosophy. You can't help, motherfucker.
This guy's bleeding.
You're gonna think away the problem.
Well, is it a problem?
Yeah. Or is it? Spinoza would say it's not.
So the compulsion towards law had nothing to do with justice.
No. No. I don't even know what justice is.
That's disappointing.
I'm disappointed in myself.
It is what it is. Yeah. What is justice?
What is it?
Yeah.
Beats me. I mean, maybe some version of equality, but then you're like, what is equality?
I think it's equal treatment.
Fair treatment fairness. Under the law.
Yeah.
But even then,
specific type of justice.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So, Plato said justice is just allowing, you know, the greatest minds to rule the.
Yeah, philosopher kings.
That
doesn't pan out.
No,
generally, they're either, you know, relatively ineffectual or horrendously tyrannical.
Because the
wiggle room on the best minds is like, it's the new idea guys that are a real problem.
Oh yeah,
big problem.
Oh yeah,
they're psychotic, and they justify everything.
That's right.
Everything.
Yeah, I'm the smartest man in the world.
Yeah,
and this is the way it's gonna work. Oh, you don't like that? Put him in the hole. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the dudes with the bold ideas.
Yeah.
Look
at Mussolini.
Yeah, sure. Bold ideas and uniforms. Nine times out of ten, not a good guy. No.
Tends to lead to tyranny. Hundreds of thousands of people will probably die.
Yeah. It's been going on since the beginning. Unbelievable. So, all right, so you go to law school, and how do you crap out there? I think you guys would have been great teachers. Everybody would have wanted to get high and go to the Lucas Brothers philosophy.
But, you know, we still might do it. Yeah. Since I've rekindled my love for philosophy. But, yeah, law just was the antithesis of...
How old are you guys?
31.
Oh, so you still got that thing, like, we could still teach. You know, if this doesn't...
delude ourselves into believing that.
That'll go away.
If it doesn't
work. I know.
Because eventually you get to a point, it's like, what credentials do we have to teach anything?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, but maybe
it's philosophy. It's philosophy. Socrates didn't get a PhD. He just used some nonsense.
So you want to be street teachers?
You
want to be like those guys?
Absolutely.
What are the weird twins doing over there?
Oh, they're just...
they're talking about some shit. And then people are hanging out.
Yeah. Look, man, if Manson was able to, get a following, I think we could figure it out.
Yeah, that didn't go well either.
It went well for a bit, and then he just...
Very short period of time. Didn't seem to have the right answers. The agenda was, a little dubious.
He was talking about the black-white race war, and I think, we're inching closer.
He wanted to start it.
But he was insane. His problem was, it was already happening.
Yeah.
The race war has been around since we got here.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been a perpetual war.
Right. He was just trying to modernize it.
Yeah.
By some very small, violent endeavors.
Yeah.
He's a lofty thinker, that guy.
Manson, jeez.
So you got to law school and you just were like, fuck it?
No, I was my first year, because I went to NYU. I was literally right around the corner from the Comedy Cellar.
Well, where was he?
I was at Duke, yeah.
You guys split up?
We split up for two and a half years.
Holy shit. Mm-hmm. How'd that go?
Brutal. It was
really?
Weird, man. Because that was the first time I was treated as an individual.
Yeah.
And it was a little shocking for me because...
I
don't like being known as Keith. I'm not Keith. Who is Keith? Who is this Keith guy you're talking about? I had to flesh him out now. I'm like, oh, fuck. This is way too much work for me.
Where's Kenny?
Where's Kenny? Where's the person that's always by my side?
Yeah. And what, is that when you went into your depression?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it was when I wasn't really feeling law. I didn't like the job. I didn't like.
But you both went to different law schools. Mm-hmm. That was the deal, and they were good ones.
Good ones, but when you don't have your brother there, I feel like that. At least for me, it impacted how I treated the career.
Yeah. Uh huh.
It felt like we were slowly just breaking apart.
Yeah,
gradually.
You felt that too.
Same. Yeah, and I was in a relationship at the time, and I could only think about my brother. And I remember when we would attack philosophy.
Yeah,
we would do it together.
Yeah,
and
right.
We have discussions and so much
hours.
Just talking about things.
It's making me sad. I'm glad that I can see that it ended up in a happy ending.
Yeah,
but right now in the story, I'm like, oh, what happened?
So you do get that separation.
But you were, so you were with a woman?
Yeah.
And you were alone.
I was a freewheeler, free.
And were you kind of kicking around campus alone going like, you don't like me anymore? he's got that chick.
I started to just lose myself into other things like booze and girls.
Yeah.
Just trying to find some sort of replacement
I developed a drug habit while in law school.
Yeah, you did?
Yeah, drinking.
Same.
Oh,
I
really?
Smoking a lot of marijuana and just trying to get my mind off of the idea of traveling this universe, you're mostly alone. And
yeah.
So I got so used
to it. The philosophy fucked you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you understood it intellectually, but in a physical universe, you're like, but I'm not alone.
No.
I got a guy that looks exactly me.
Always by my
another
side.
State, and we need to pull this shit together.
Yeah. Because
that's the only way we can fight the existential horror.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, absolutely. And the dread, you have all these thoughts in your head, and they just stay there when you're by yourself. When I had my brother there, I can always just talk to him.
Yeah. Sure.
Get it out.
Yeah.
And it was unfair. I treated him as my therapist.
Yeah.
When in reality, I
did the same thing.
Yeah.
So it was a mutual.
But is it really that? Or I imagine that there has to be some strange symbiotic ability that you guys have over other people in terms of emotional understanding.
Sure.
to each other at
sure,
least.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, you know, I know the Sklar brothers. I think they're identical.
They are.
When I first started watching the Sklar brothers, I'm like, they're doing the act of one guy. Like, there was no definitive, like, you know, oh, he's the setup guy. He's the straight man. It was just sort of like finishing sentences and finishing thoughts. Mm-hmm. And it was very, you know, organic and kind of odd, but it was really like two guys doing one guy's act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but I think the argument that we can make is that we are kind of one guy. We just sort of split in the fucking womb.
So now we're getting into medicine and philosophy.
Yes. I think we are technically one guy.
I think it's because we have such a shared experience.
Right.
But I think you want to get to the point where you can specify the two and see who you can individualize.
Infuse some of your pain into it that's distinct from his. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, like, right.
I have distinct pain. I mean, yeah. I have a different set of issues that I have to deal with. And I think that if we can...
Do you?
Yeah, I think so.
Absolutely.
I think so.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we worry about different things. Yeah. I think our depression comes from the same source.
Yeah.
But how we deal with it is a little different.
So you're fucking drinking, you're getting fucked up down in, what is that, North Carolina.
Yeah,
he's
in
New York City, which is, he's already got the edge on. He's like in the world.
He's in a better place.
I'm not saying it's nice
Durham,
down there.
Durham's beautiful.
It's great. I was just there. It's great. Great
town. But you're sort of like, again, it's that loneliness. And mm-hmm. You're constantly in your mind and... You're starting to chase these things that you think will bring you happiness, and when they don't, you sort of, I don't know, you have a bit of an existential breakdown.
Right. Well, I think that's it. The thing about being in your head, if there are two of you, at least you can just jump into his head. You jump back and forth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's absolutely right.
And it's been there since the womb.
Since day one.
You're doing that.
That's right. Exactly.
So what facilitated the reunion?
Well, I thought about suicide. I was thinking suicide.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what the hell would he do?
I know. That's the reason I didn't do it.
It's like, fuck it. Come
on,
man.
That's the reason I didn't do it. I was like, I can't leave my brother on this earth by himself. So I said no, but I still, you know, had to.
Was it self-pity and intellectual exercise, or when you look back on it, do you feel like you were really there?
No, it was more self-pity.
Yeah.
It was more... I don't think I was there.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I was just going through a moment and I didn't know how to handle it.
Right.
So it was one of those things.
So did he come down and save you?
I was actually in New York.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But he did save me. And he was there for me for what? I don't know, you were always there for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, at that point, I think he started to think, all right, maybe this law shit isn't the path for us.
Yeah.
Maybe law, not just law, but maybe the circumstances of us not being together, and is having an effect on both of us.
Yeah. Right.
I was examining the consequences and saying to myself that if being separate and doing something that we don't like leads us here, then maybe we should do something together that we do like.
Yeah.
That was the simple logic.
Yeah, yeah.
And so comedy, I would go to the Comedy Cellar all the time. It was right there, and I would just go watch. And I was like, I don't think we will be great at this, but it could be. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. We got a hook.
We got a hook.
We got
an angle.
Yeah, and we love comedy, so perhaps there's something there.
Yeah.
So where'd you start? New York?
Started in New York.
So you dropped out of Jersey. You dropped out of school?
He called me up. He was like, do you want to drop out? And I was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I dropped out, and I moved to Jersey.
Yeah.
And he was living with his girlfriend at the time.
And we were going through a breakup because I told her I didn't want to be a lawyer. I wanted to be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, that's not realistic. And I was like, you're right. It's not.
It's not
you should
realistic,
probably leave.
But good for you. My brother's moving back.
I got my brother back.
You know what? He's cooler anyway. We can play video games and smoke weed. Can't do that with you. You have babies over.
Yeah. And what'd your mom think of this decision?
Our mom has always been super supportive of anything that we've done. Like, she was just happy that we got out of high school.
Yeah.
So, like, when we said, well, we were going to do comedy for the sake of doing comedy, she was like, mm-hmm. why not? And she supported us.
And she was probably happy you guys were together.
Again. Yeah, mm-hmm. She just wants us to be happy. So anything that makes us happy, she's completely on board.
That's right.
Did you tell her it was living a virtuous life?
No, she's like, make some money. Virtue ain't going to pay the bills.
Virtue does not pay the rent. I wish it did, though. That would be awesome.
So where you guys started in Jersey?
Jersey.
What were the first bits like? What was the angle?
Man, I mean, well.
Were you doing more sketch, did you think? Or was it right from the beginning you had a dynamic?
Well, Kenny started before me, so he sort of had
I took some comedy classes in New York.
Did you learn things in those?
I did. I think I learned a lot of good things. I think the one thing that stuck with me always was never hold the mic cord. It's weird. Keep the mic up. Deliver your punchlines confidently. I mean, these are. I know that they seem basic, but like
when you just hold the mic cord,
don't because there were comedians who would get up and they'd be nervous and then they'd start like tangling
playing
with
the
cord and like looking around or playing with the
mic
stand.
Have to make some decision at some point. It's like, is it going to stay in the stand am I going to take that fucking thing out?
That's right.
And deal with that business.
Yeah. I like to play around with both of them. But
yeah,
usually,
me too. Yeah, it obviously becomes habit of some kind.
Of course.
At some point, you're not hung up on, you know, what's going to happen with the microphone.
I
still go off mic sometimes, but I like to do it. But yeah, the only thing I have a problem with is the tripod stands, like that one back there. If I see one of those on stage, I'm like, that's not happening.
Yeah.
That's going to fuck you.
I don't like those.
It's going to fuck you.
Or I hate when it's attached to the piano and you got to like.
Oh, that? I won't do cordless.
No, can't
do it.
No?
But it's a philosophical thing. I'm like, I don't believe in this magic.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, it's just weird. They don't fit in the stand right. They're always bulky. They haven't aced it yet. Yeah. So, but those stands will always fuck you. You're going to be wrestling with one of those things during your act, if that's there. And usually it's at music venues and like, nope, give me what do they call it? A 58 on a stick.
Yep, that's all I need.
With a wire.
Yep.
I need to know that I'm connected to something.
That's right.
But did you learn anything about structure? I think the biggest benefit of those classes is that usually you get to go on stage at the end.
That showcase.
The big payoff is like, we're going to do a night at Stand Up New York.
It helps.
You did it too?
When I came to Jersey, we took a class. We took Joe Matarese's class at the Stress Factor.
Yeah. Joe was teaching one too?
Joe's teaching one. Holy shit.
Yeah. Joe's a good guy.
I love Joe.
I like Joe.
What'd you learn from Joe? To be intense?
He was actually the one who said, just be you. Like, be yourself. Like,
yeah.
Have fun. Like, just like, whatever you feel is right.
I love that guy. I think he's a sweet guy.
He's so great.
Yeah. He also said, like, you know, go personal. Like, be personal.
Yeah.
Talk about the issues that are affecting you.
Yeah.
When we first started, it was all just this observational stuff, which we still kind of do, but we realized at some point we had to get personal.
Because you want to tell your story, right? Yeah. I think.
Yeah, because I imagine at some point there's an audience going like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Well, how do you guys live?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You, there is a strange...
Do you sit there in the morning and go like, do you want to wear these today? Or could I wear them?
That happens. It does happen.
It does.
We think it's normal, but it's not.
It is normal.
It is normal for us.
Yeah.
It's a very symbiotic relationship. Like I see him and I say, oh, this is what you should do, or this is what you ought to do, and it's like a back and forth.
But
it's very
do you have this moment like we can't wear the exact same thing?
You know, when we first started, we thought we had to be a little different, but as we're getting into it, we're like, fuck it, man. Let's like. What language do we use? Let's
take it to its logical conclusion.
Let's take the gimmick to its logical conclusion.
Let's see
how far it can go.
Because
why not?
Yeah.
Because why not?
That's the intriguing thing, right?
Yeah.
I think.
Well, it's intriguing, but also you guys are thoughtful guys. That becomes like, I imagine that becomes the bigger challenge is that once you realize like, you know, we maximize the gimmick, but... You know, what we really have to offer is our point of view.
Sure.
Either together or separate. You know, we're thoughtful, intelligent people that write thoughtful, intelligent stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that has to transcend the gimmick. That has to be the surprise.
Absolutely.
Right?
I totally agree. I mean, I feel like if you can put some substance behind the gimmick, it'll have more of an impact. Or at least it'll...
Because Hollywood wants us to be like stoners and...
The happy stoner.
Well, yeah, but you're going to be up against that, you know, like if you're going to be doing this together and you're going to be working this angle, mm-hmm. like, you know, you're going to be a punchline, you know, until you're not.
Yep. Yeah.
If you can transcend that, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, that's the challenge, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, you can transcend it in your own work.
Sure.
But in terms of casting and that kind of stuff,
it's
got to be like maybe when the thing on fire falls out the building, the two black guys, the twins, should be like, "What happened? I don't know."
That's it.
I mean, that's
no nuance.
The Hollywood nuance right there. I mean, you know, that's the thing. Like, that's why I'm glad we have stand-up, because stand-up gives you that...
Freedom.
It gives you that freedom to be you.
Yeah.
Whereas Hollywood, you know, they're going to put you in a box.
But yeah, so like, but the so you started in Jersey. You were at Vinny's Club. Where were you?
We're at the Stress Factory. Yeah. We did a lot of the small alternative rooms. It's not many in Jersey, but we realized quickly that...
Oh, they were already there when you started. The alternative was a thing. Yeah.
They were already, Bar shows.
Yeah.
It was always like people who were just like taking some time off from like a job to do it part-time.
You could tell they weren't doing it. Like,
right.
Not all of them, but
they
some.
They weren't lifers.
Yeah, there were some lifers there, but... Yeah. They're always like, we got to make the move to New York.
Yeah. You get those old Jersey guys are sort of like, I'll do the new thing. They come down.
And then we...
But did you like Roger Paul rooms and shit? Were those around yet? The one-nighters and stuff?
No.
Maybe that was done.
We were doing...
Did you ever do Rascals?
Never did Rascals.
Was that gone?
I think it's still there.
Oh,
I just don't think we ever did it.
No, we were
Tony Camacho
open mics
rooms.
Though. We were doing like a lot of open mics.
Yeah, you guys came a different generation than me. But you did Vinny's room.
We did Stress Factory once during that time.
Yeah,
and we did some of the open mics there, but we weren't really performing at big shows.
When did you have an act?
How long did it take? 3 days ago. I think it might be there.
Uh huh.
We still got some time.
I mean we sort of had a connection on stage, but we didn't have any substantive jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe once we moved to Brooklyn,
that's when
we started to realize, okay, this is how you do stand-up.
Well, because there's a community there. Then the competition sets in.
Yeah, you see people like
Mark we got to get some game. And,
we saw Norman and
Michael Che
and
Kevin Barnett.
Barnett and
everyone. Like
Lawrence. All these guys were there at the same time. Mike Lawrence. And they were all there at the same time. We went to this open mic called...
The
Woodshed in Legion Bar.
Yeah.
And it was 50 to 60 comics. And it was like those guys. And they were just, in 2 minutes, just some of the best jokes I've ever heard. Yeah. I'm like, holy shit.
Mike Lawrence is kind of a joke wizard.
I mean, he's a wizard.
Master.
I mean, he's a maestro. And Norman's a maestro. And
Who's Norm?
Mark Norman?
He's
another guy who's just spitting out jokes, and you're like, holy shit, like, this is real comedy. This is actual comedy.
So you study those guys. The Attell School.
Or Hannibal, like all these guys.
Louis C.K. had it you guys set the stage.
But it's weird, like you watch, like I worked with Mike, and like I remember it because he was represented by the woman who represented me, and he would, the first time he opened for me, and you meet him, and it's sort of like, where's this gonna go?
Yeah.
How's this gonna work?
Yeah.
And the way he owns who he is on stage is fucking, it's brilliant.
It is.
And you're just like, to see that guy go in front of a room of people who you know are immediately judging him.
Completely.
Like what the fuck is, why is this guy out of his mom's house?
Yeah. His mom's basement.
Yeah, and then he just fucking unloads.
I mean, he's fearless and he has
a punchline every 3 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
He can just ring them off. I've never seen it.
That's the Attell thing, different than Louis, you know, because Louis is sort of abstract. But I always come back to Attell. I was talking about him the other night. Who's that? Ryan Singer was out opening for him. But like to watch Attell, you know, more than anybody else, and I'm not that kind of joke writer, but you're sort of like, why should I even do this?
Exactly. You know? You like, marvel at it. You're like, holy
it's unbelievable.
It's unreal.
Mike's like that too.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible.
So you got the fire under you. You're like, well, we can't fucking fake through it anymore.
No, we can't be this twin gimmick anymore.
The maximizing the gimmick thing just got diminished.
Write some jokes? Learn how to write jokes.
And
Brooklyn is the place to be in terms of joke writing.
Man. Uh-huh.
It was just expert joke writing.
And it's a good community, you know.
Great community.
Yeah, there's the whole generation that you guys come from. You know, we were all kind of, I don't know, my generation, you never felt, well, we were all comics, but you know, and there was a community, but you guys all seemed to, you know, kind of genuinely like each other. Mm-hmm. And I guess we did too. I shouldn't diminish it. It just felt more competitive when I was doing it because the club system was in place. So you were all trying to get the same thing and it was limited.
Less opportunity, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think so.
Especially with like,
I think
even
so.
even in Hollywood, you know, it's just network
TV. Like if you're going to do comedy clubs, if you're going to make money as a comic at that time, you had to do the clubs. You couldn't just sort of like, well, Hannibal's got that thing on Monday night. Does it pay? No, it doesn't matter. It's like, you know, we were kind of like, you know, if you're doing, you didn't do the free spots, were supposed to stop after your open mic days.
I see.
Even if it was $25.
Yeah.
You know, the idea was like, we got to get these spots where you get get the money.
Yeah.
You know, and work the club. Got to figure out how to work a club and work for any audience, yeah, not just like-minded people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not being condescending. I mean, I was there at the beginning of whatever alt comedy was called. But for me, it was just sort of like, you mean I can just come here and I don't have to do jokes? I can blow off steam?
Yeah.
And think out loud. That sounds good. You can't do that at a club.
No, you gotta give them some jokes.
Yeah.
And I think that's good.
Yeah.
But I also think there's something great about also not thinking about the joke and arriving at it more in a spiritual way. But
that's interesting. How do you mean?
Because
We're not machines.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm not either. But
I know.
But like, I'm curious if you sometimes. Being that we're talking philosophy, what is the spiritual component?
I think you can come up with jokes in two ways. You can do it like in a way that's a priori, and that's just like sitting there writing it and figuring out the formal structure.
Not my way.
That's normally not my way either. I think a better way, not a better way, but the way that I've just grown accustomed to is like living and then arriving at the punchline organically. And like if you're telling a bit riff it out, a story. If you're telling
our dialectical, talk it out.
Yeah. Like a more experimental way of arriving.
Well,
at
yeah, because then, like, if, for me, and it took me a long time to realize this, is that once you, for whatever reason, whether you believe it or not, you're a funny person, right? So, like, you can write those jokes, and you go up and like, I'm going to try this joke,
mm-hmm.
and you do the math of it. That's like, that's symbolic logic.
Yeah.
That is exactly what it is, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, there's the three, there's the five, mm-hmm. there's the beat. If I take that word out, boom, it's a math equation.
Yep.
And then you go up, and it's like, well, maybe I got to, that didn't quite work the way I wanted it to.
Maybe if I,
but yeah, and I do that, I'm doing that a little more recently just because I want to give myself a break from the existential, spiritual struggle. But like most of my jokes are written where like I got an idea, I go up there, I start talking about the idea, and because of the pressure, then like, you know, like the one thing I know is like I got to be funny.
Yeah.
So like I corner myself, and then you just wait for the muse. Like, is it going to come?
Yeah.
Is it like, and you think you do the thought, and then you like just out of necessity,
the funny thing
happens.
And isn't that beautiful? Though?
It's the best.
It's beautiful
because you don't know where it came from.
No.
You don't know where it came from. Like you have these jokes you do for a year, and it's like it's beautiful, and then something else will just add onto it.
Yeah,
like, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
Did you write that? I'm like, no, it came.
Yeah.
I love that part.
That's the beauty of the human mind. Like, things
I love it.
Yeah. Flow to you. And you're just like, you're in your.
The beauty of the human mind is being terrified and out of necessity.
It's like you're almost working with the crowd too.
Yeah.
Like you're working with the audience to come up with this sort of idea.
Yeah.
And there are moments that happen on stage where I'm like, that was the best thing that's going to happen tonight, and it's never going to happen again.
I know. That's the best thing. When you do something, it's like, oh, it's great. I'm never going to do it again.
I don't even know how it happened.
Yeah.
But I know enough to know it's not repeatable.
Yeah. Well, it's not repeatable.
Right.
Yeah. But every show is different. Every audience is different. I mean, you never really perform in front of the same group of people. You've never done it.
Nope. Yeah. Like, unless you're doing those bringer shows.
Yeah.
Unless you're
doing those bringer shows. Another one. Please. Yeah. Not again.
Are they still doing the same shit? Like, when am I on? You just look in the room and you're like, oh fuck, how long has he been up there?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I was watching last night. I went to the Comedy Store, and I had not stayed late in a long time, you know, and I used to work the door there, and there's just that shift, you know, like I like going on early, so it's a nice fresh audience. No one's too fucked up, and but like, you know, I stayed like till midnight.
Ooh.
And there's like this shift where you got a full room, and then at some point, you know, just collectively for no reason, like half the audience is like, we're done.
Oh, fuck it.
and they're bringing up a dude.
Yeah.
And then half the audience it was Eric Griffin. And I just saw like 40 people. They get up and they're walking as he's coming to the stage. Wow. And I'm like, oh, this is where it really happened.
Yeah.
Now he's got to go fucking pull this shit together.
Yeah.
And it was kind of wild because, like, it's that's the comic experience. As a comic, how many times you've seen that?
Mm-hmm.
Just a dude or a woman or two dudes just sort of, like, working nine people.
Yeah.
That's what they got.
Yeah. You got to work with what you got.
Yeah. It's great. It's great.
Comedy prepares you for life, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I think every, like, never I see, know what I you're see it, like, get. It's always the same. It's like, you got the audience, you got the mic. It doesn't matter if it's nine people or 50,000.
As you get older, you have these amazing things with nine people or with four people, but when you really think about it, you know, if the stage wasn't there and the mic wasn't there,
you're just you
talking
and
to poor people, because you could, you know, just people that you don't know.
Yeah,
you know?
Just random strangers.
But things can happen in those shows. Like, that was the greatest show ever. It's like, but was it a show?
Yeah. What's a show? Well, now we're going back to the philosophy.
Now this is philosophy.
What are the necessary and sufficient conditions?
But it is, and you remember them. Like, you know, nine people is always the number. You know,
it's always nine.
Yeah, because there's
ten's too many.
Yeah, there's an odd one out there. Yeah, that one guy was by himself, and he was there all night. Oh, fuck. You know, it's like weird. You go to the Comedy Store and, like, you know, I'm wandering around. And I go right back into, like, I you know, I'm just shy of, you know, working the door.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, the muscles there, like, you know, you want me to seat these guys? You know, like, but then you start looking at people and, like, I had this moment because, you know, we live in the world we live in and, it's, you know, and it's like insanity over there. And it's just this weird, it's always been this vortex of loose people.
For sure.
And, like, there's just some guy sitting on a wall talking to himself. And, I walk by him twice and I'm like, ugh. What is that? Yeah. And I walk up to one of the door guys. I'm like, who's the guy around the corner sitting on the wall talking to himself? And I knew in my mind that he was going to walk over there and come back and go, yeah, it's a comic.
It's like, damn.
It was. Like, okay, so as long as he's not preparing for something. Other than maybe
but
a
But you
set.
Never truly know, man.
You don't
Comedians
know.
Are... We're a strange bunch.
All right. So when did you get depressed?
I got depressed last year. It was
holy shit. Yeah, you kind of waited.
I waited. I was too concerned about his depression. Mm-hmm. I was like, I put mine aside. I was like, I got to focus.
But you must have had a lot more sort of like, you must have had a bigger philosophical defense of your depression.
Yeah, of course. I built up the years. So I was ready to defend it. I think it was just like... coming from Brooklyn and moving to Hollywood, it was such a jarring thing for me because Hollywood's just a different place.
Animal.
It's a different animal.
There's nothing really like it.
Unlike anything.
There's no real, like, there's no center to it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, there's no cultural center to it. It's so infused with Hollywood. And I love
California.
I don't love the business, but I love Hollywood. I love the idea of Hollywood.
I guess so.
I mean, kind of like maybe
I do
maybe,
too. No, I mean,
I'm trying to figure out the better way to say this. I love. I mean, we watch so much stuff that
you have to be enamored by it.
I think it was different when it was a little more intimate. Like there was less options. You know, now it's sort of so broke open where you know people are like I do a joke about it on stage where I say like it's gotten to the point I don't know if I'm old where someone can ask me if I've seen a show. Not only have I not heard of the show, but when they tell me where it's on, I don't know what that is.
That's true. We had a show on True TV. Like, what's True TV?
How do I get that?
What the fuck is that? Yeah. That's true. It's like it's so splintered now.
But there is the idea that, you know, if you do your creative work and you keep your shit together, that you can surface.
Precisely.
Right.
Sure. And that's still a thing, I think.
Sure. And you go to meetings at all big buildings and offices with people and you talk to them about yourself and you pitch things and you walk out going like, that guy's in charge of our future. Yeah. Those three people are going to make the decision.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
It's so weird. It's like, but I'm the comedic genius.
What do they know?
I know more, so I don't know Lenny Bruce. I read about the book.
They don't read Spinoza.
They know they've got to fill their schedule with clowns that come in and they're like, what are you doing this afternoon? Well, I had two wines, but we got these twins coming in, so that should be fun.
So you start to instantly realize, oh, I'm just a fucking
commodity. I didn't feel like a commodity.
And that's what threw you?
It threw me.
Oh,
I've been trying to move away from that for so long with the law shit, and I wanted to, you know, do comedy for a spiritual reason.
But wasn't the commodity didn't have any historical ghosts?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like I didn't need to bring race into it.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
Oh, good. Yes, that's probably better off.
No, but that's right. But maybe that's a part of it. Maybe that was a part of it. Feeling like, you know.
I'm
labor, and I'm like, it's not about the comedy.
But not only labor, but you're also up against that. You know, you're not one black guy fighting against typecasting, but you're two black guys fighting against a different type of podcasting.
Yeah, that's right.
No, they're nerdy stoner black guys, and they're twins, so it's not really about them being black.
No.
They're not doing a regular black thing.
No, they're doing this twin thing, which they can just sort of imbue the race into it, and we can get the best of both worlds, and it's like... I just want to do comedy.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So how did you pull out of that? How'd you save him from the commodification?
It was him. It was Keith.
The existential commodification depression.
Keith constantly said, "Look, man, we're doing this shit together. This is fun.
Like, yeah.
This it's is Hollywood.
It's still an experience. Yeah. I mean, for better or for worse, it's us going through an experience. And like I said, I tell him, like, no great story is told without obstacles. So, like, even with the obstacles, you're still living a decent story. Yeah. Just embrace that. Embrace that moment.
Yeah.
Not think about the end result.
And then
give a shit.
And then he looked at you and he went, "All right. What's that bit we're doing?"
All right. I was like, let's get back to the pot bit. Let's do the weed thing. I mean, a lot of it was actually our past trauma. We never really
resurfacing,
We never really addressed growing up where we grew up, and it sort of manifested itself
in
different ways. It with law, with comedy. We just didn't address the childhood trauma,
which was specifically what?
Growing up without a father. Yeah. You know, growing up poor. Growing up with an abusive stepfather.
Yeah.
Growing up in a drug addict.
The deaths, like
the
so
suicides,
many.
I just repressed it all. I never talked to a therapist about it. I was just like, fuck it, I'm gonna attack law and attack whatever I do. And
I'm gonna transcend.
I'm gonna become successful.
Yeah, right.
And when you don't achieve success, and you don't address your past trauma, it almost as if like
you tie your self-worth to what you perceive as failure,
right?
Because you already feel worthless because you grew up poor, and
right?
Like, you never really. I like to this day, I'm insecure about my looks. I'm insecure about
my intelligence,
everything. Like, I'm constantly thinking I'm not worthy enough.
When you fail, it's an even bigger reaction.
Like, because then it's sort of like, of course I did.
Of course I did. Again, it's just what it was meant to be.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Victim mode.
Yeah. Yeah, you start to put yourself in a victim mode.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you take things, I think, out of proportion.
Yeah. So how did you get hip to that process of grieving or acknowledging the trauma?
Kenny suggested therapy for the first time in our lives. At 30, we were like, "Oh, let's talk to a therapist."
We went together.
Joint therapy.
Yeah, couples therapy.
Couples therapy. It was couples, and we were having issues with communication too, like fighting all the time. And I think it was just, I hate myself, but I get to see him, so I hate him too. Like,
yeah, like, project it right onto him.
I get to punch him in the face and punch myself.
It's so much easier than projecting it onto an audience or a woman. It's like, you got a guy that looks exactly like you. It's like, I hate me, you.
Yeah. That's exactly what it was, though. Or is. Yeah. I hate me, you.
I hate me, you.
That's so great. That is so great.
You can have it.
Oh, thank you. I hate me. Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah. I hate poetry.
So yeah, it's that inner hatred that you have for yourself, and then it manifests itself when you fail.
Yeah,
and I failed that law
because you got to blame somebody.
You got to blame someone. Can't blame.
Hard to blame yourself.
Hard to blame yourself.
Hard to take the responsibility for that. You'd rather think you're getting fucked somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Conspiratorial. Yeah. Paranoid.
Yeah. And so the therapy helped.
Tremendously. Yeah. I mean, our therapist just told us, like, we recognized
that. Was it a special twin therapist?
She's a children's therapist.
Oh, interesting.
And she deals with, like, childhood trauma.
Oh, interesting.
It was just, like, I never cried about my past.
Oh, good.
It was at that point where I was, like, I realized I never cried about growing up the way I grew up.
And yeah.
I finally cried for the first time about it, and it was very relieving.
Yeah.
It just, like, felt like
letting
it go.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you both cry?
Oh, yeah.
Different times?
Yeah. Same time. For the first time in our lives, we cried together. We had a moment. I was like, holy shit. It was like, all this shit we just kept in. And it's like, you got to let that stuff out. You got to let it out somehow.
That must have been an insane morning.
Hey, man, you want to wear this? No, man. I'm crying too. Oh, no. I hate my stepdad.
Me too. That's so funny. The immediate connection with someone else around it. There was no distance. You didn't have to call the other brother.
We were hugging.
Very cathartic.
It was nice.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Do you still go? Or?
Yeah, we still go. We're meditating more. We're reading more philosophy and realizing that, you know, everybody has problems.
Yeah.
And everyone deals with their problems in certain ways. But
yeah.
You got to recognize that this is a
I don't know, a special time for us.
So yeah. We're doing this thing. We're engaging in comedy. Like, it's like, it's
and you
amazing.
Got this, and you got this special.
Oh, yeah. That's out.
Yeah. That's what we're here.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to talk to you.
No. But, like, when did you, this is the first special, right?
Yeah, this is our first special.
Had you done an album before?
No.
So this is the first thing.
The first big thing. Yeah.
Where is it on?
Netflix.
Oh, you get, and it's on the big thing.
It's on the big thing.
Everyone knows what that is.
Yeah. On Netflix. Oh, and you're great in Glow.
Oh, thank you very much,
fantastic.
Buddy.
I think it's
beautiful. It surprised everybody, me included.
It's a beautiful show.
It is, really, actually. For me, it's like it's all gravy on some degree. You know, somehow or another, I managed to, you know, make a life for myself here in the garage. And when I started it, I'd let go of the, I'm going to be a big comedian, or I'm going to be an actor, I'm going to have a show. I let go of all that, and somehow or another, out of this garage, it all comes.
It's such a beautiful story.
It's a historic story. It's crazy.
And I just wanted to try acting not as me. And I felt confident. You know, I didn't feel like I was an actor necessarily, but I knew that I'd gotten the experience, the graduate school, doing my own show on IFC that a few people watched. But I knew, like, I was comfortable. I understood the fucking thing.
Dude, it's amazing.
So when I entered this, I'm like, I get how it works. Now I just got to focus on being this guy and maybe it'll work. And none of it was hanging on me other than the own challenge to me. Like, you know, I got to become this guy. The worst thing that could happen... The worst thing is that, like, people are like, nah, Maron didn't do it. Yeah. He didn't pull it off. That was the worst thing. It would hurt, but it'd be like, it ain't hanging on me. You know, like, you're not, you know, if the show didn't work out, not my fault.
I already got paid, baby.
Look at the writers. It ain't me. Paycheck coming in.
If I didn't do a bad job acting, it's someone else's problem.
Yeah. That's right.
So I'm glad.
That was a fucking cultural phenomenon. I mean, you're integral to it.
I'm excited. It was all, like I said, I'm open to it. I'm surprised about it. In all honesty, and I hope to God you guys can get to this place sometime. Yeah. I don't give a fuck.
That's where I want to get to. That's exactly where I want. Yeah.
That, I mean, that's the key. I think that's the key. Not giving a fuck.
It's very hard to get there, honestly. Yeah,
of course.
Requires something like, you know, obviously, look, I'm not Louis. I'm not Kevin Hart.
But you're you, though.
Right. That's it. At some point, that's what you realize. Yeah. That's what I'm working for. And it's like, all I want to do is make a living. Yeah. I just didn't want to be like, fuck, what happens now?
Yeah. But you got it. Like, your story is very inspirational. Like, we see it and we're like, okay, this is a guy who went up against forces that we have to go up against, and you're persevering.
Yeah.
That's important to
us.
Yeah,
it was a complete desperation and fear.
But it doesn't seem like that. You seem like a courageous hero,
like a prophet. That's where that comes from. All those guys start completely desperate and terrified.
But you didn't give up. You know what I mean?
But that's the problem. It's like, after a certain point, like I said to you earlier, it's like, you know, the teaching thing gets further and further away.
That's right.
It's like, there is no giving up. Who's going to fire you? I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, and the pride involved in it. Like, I could always jump off a bridge. Well, that's it. Those are the options. Either I set these mics up in my garage or I fucking hang myself in it.
I guess I gotta go with option one. That's great.
That's where it comes from. And but you know, I feel better.
Yeah.
It's not like I didn't put the time in. You know,
you did the work.
I don't think anyone's gonna say, like, that guy didn't deserve that.
No, not at all. I mean, it's just like, once you live within yourself and realize, like, okay, this is my story, this is my life, and I'm going to do whatever I can do to make it make it my story, and that's what you did.
You have no choice.
You literally have no choice.
That's what I believe. And then you know, depending on when it happens, if it happens, then you got to figure out, like, well, what is my life now? Yeah. Right. So I fought the fight. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel all right. I'm doing what I want to do, but I don't know how to have a good time.
What is a good time?
Exactly.
Yeah, virtue, man.
Happy.
The virtuous life.
Well, I don't know. The virtue, like, I'm going to need a little work. I got some virtuous elements, some elements not so virtuous.
You can't be too virtuous.
There's no such thing as too much virtue. You don't want to be corrupt. You know, on all levels. It's an ongoing dialogue.
The Aristotelian golden mean. You know, you want to find somewhere in the middle.
You try to help. You try not to hurt people. And you know, you try to fight the good fight in the way that you're capable of, and you try to make sure that some part of you is honestly doing it for the right reasons and not for selfish reasons.
Without a doubt. And I think that, I mean, you are living a virtuous life.
I'm doing all right.
You're doing a great thing. I think you have to really like sit back and marvel in it and be like,
I do sometimes.
You should
talk to, but I got to be careful because one of my virtuous liabilities, one of the liabilities to my virtue is that, you know, if I start feeling too good about me,
okay,
and then I'm going to start being like, who the fuck are you guys?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, but that's fair.
So you guys are doing a twin thing?
Yeah,
great.
I get it.
That's just what we need.
Yeah, more twin shit. Nah.
Jesus Christ. I don't want to be that guy again.
That's fair. No, but I feel like you can never become that person again.
I don't think you've evolved to
a point where you're, at least from my perspective, it seems as if you're more at ease.
Yeah. Well, I think that it reengaged me with an empathy that I had shut down out of my own sort of spite.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, out of my own entitlement, out of my own self-pity.
Yeah.
If you're consumed with self-pity or angry that your life did not turn out the way you want, it's very difficult to be empathetic.
I totally agree.
Because, you know, because you're sort of this, like, you know, how are you going to put yourself in the shoes of somebody else when you feel like you've been fucked?
Absolutely.
Like, everybody should put themselves in your shoes.
Yeah.
I got problems.
Yeah.
And, like, and then, you know, that can lead to real problems.
Yeah, really, you're so me-oriented.
Right.
It's impossible to think about other people.
Yeah, and I think this thing is, like, helped on a lot of levels, spiritual, philosophical, you know, moral, emotional. But I'm glad you guys got this special. So what do you, are you happy with it?
No, I don't think anyone is happy with I'm happy that I was able to do it.
Yeah.
I'm privileged to have been able to do a special, but I'm always like, it has to be better. I have to do better than this. Like,
I'm happy.
I'm happy. But I'm hard on myself. I always want to do better.
I think it's when I think about my comedy career, I think about it holistically.
Sure. Yeah.
Obviously, this is the first special, and presumably, if you do another one, it should get better.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. It's not about that. It's about being able to work with your brother and
that's true.
Put comedy out there.
Yeah.
You know, some people watch it and laugh, and it makes their
day. It is a beautiful. Yeah.
It's just a beautiful
experience. And that's it. Yeah. Yeah. So you got to fight that commodity thing.
That's
because the weird thing is that we don't live in a time where, like, it everything is in the balance. You know, it's not make or break.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of specials to the point where it's like, how special are they really?
Yeah.
And it's just that, like, if you can appreciate that you did that thing and it's good and you're happy, like, not necessarily happy with it, but you did the best you could.
Sure.
And where'd you tape it?
We taped it in Brooklyn.
Oh, great.
It's like, it's a special because it's special to me.
Yeah, it's special
like,
to me.
I don't need it to be special to everyone.
Well, I think people are going to like it. And it's, what's it called? On Drugs.
On Drugs, yeah. But it's not just about drugs.
It's catchy.
It's a philosophy. You know, philosophers have
sure,
the on.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, that kind of on.
It's that kind of on.
Yeah, that might be one of those decisions that, in retrospect, you're gonna like, I don't think people got that.
I'm sure most people.
Well, that's all we have to say. It's about, you know, it's like On Liberty by John Stuart Mill. Right. On drugs. Guys.
Yeah, yeah. I've made those kind of decisions.
Music.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, this is clever.
Yeah.
Lost on everyone.
Yeah, yeah. No one gets it. No one gets it.
But yeah, like, comedy's so personal. Like, it's like, if you sometimes we think about everything else but that personal relationship with the comedy.
Yeah
And I like to just keep it there.
Yeah,
well, it feels like your collective heart's in the right place.
No, I think so.
And I'm glad you guys leveled off.
Yeah.
And this was great. I had a great time talking to you.
Thank you.
Okay, that was fun. Philosophical. A lot of stuff. I enjoyed that. I get a kick out of those guys. I get a kick out of those Lucas brothers. What can I tell you? I do. Go to WTF Pod for all your WTF Pod needs. Get on the mailing list. Pre-order the book is there. And why don't I'm going to play guitar with that Keeley engineering pedal I got. That came with the extra wire thing that I don't think I'm going to use unless someone comes over here and tells me what the fuck it's for. All right, so I'm just going to... I don't know what this thing does. It sounds nice. It's a double tracker, a 30 mS double tracker from Keeley. I don't know, and I'm not using the extra wire. I know that, but it sounds pretty. It sounds pretty.
Boomer lives.
Hey, folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.